You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident fanalist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_daddy. This is episode 718. Completely random number, but I never really say what the number is. And I just kind of visualized this morning the reality that not everybody's been listening since episode 1. I've barely been listening since episode 1. Some people are just flipping through these garbage directories that don't know what good podcasts are, and they're like, I don't know, let's give this loser a try. And then I envision me saying 718 and them going, whoa, this guy's been around a while, what's up with that? And then it's like, I know, right? iTunes, what is up with that? Anyways, 718 is what we're doing today, rocking in a free world. So I want to start off with a couple questions. There's only three today. But some of them have been backlogged and sitting at the bottom of my list, so I just dragged them to the top. I can't super imagine that's going to be the first half before the, you know, second break. But we'll see how it goes, because there's plenty to talk about after that. Make sure that you are in the Packernet Podcast Facebook group. It's a great place for, conversation. I also pluck a lot of what I talk about here from the podcast Facebook group, especially when I'm running low, which I kind of feel like I am. We'll see how the news is today. But probably going to start poaching off the Facebook group pretty soon. If you'd like to support the Packernet Podcast Facebook group, that's not how that works. Leave a 5-star iTunes review. That's you don't like and subscribe. Although you could subscribe. You know what? Just do whatever you want. I can't think today. Otherwise, patreon.com/pack_daddy. Thank you very much to Cam for jumping on board. We are at 104, and like I said, if we get to 125 by the end of the month, we will be doing a Pro Football Focus subscription giveaway. Not the $200 one, but like the $30 or $40 one. But that does have their entire draft guide, which is filled with like 150 prospects, which I know actually isn't that much. Maybe it's more than that. Maybe they upped it. But it's super in-depth with stats that you're not going to find literally anywhere else. It's pretty solid. Plus, you still get the grades from each of the players. The only thing, it has, I think, everything. I think it has the quarterback thing, too. It just doesn't have the super in-depth searchable NFL stats. But I think it has literally everything else. And you get it for an entire year. So you can jump in on Patreon for as little as a buck a month. Consider it. Thank you. Much appreciated. Anyways, why don't we take our first break? We'll be right back.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing. But they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, so I want to start off with a question that I got from Riker. Fantastic name, by the way. But this was on Patreon. And I feel bad because it's like I get a Patreon question. It's like, oh, this needs to go to the top because it's Patreon. But I didn't know the answer. But I don't know how many people this has crossed their mind. But it'll be a little bit informative for all of us because I had never even really considered it. He says, I understand the NFL scheduling format is that we play every AFC team on a 4-year rotation. So AFC, North, East, South, West is on a 4-year rotation. He said, this also rotates home and away versus those AFC teams. So basically we play at each AFC team every 8 years. Anyway, my question is, after playing at Kansas City in 2007, why did we play there again in 2011? And he's particularly upset because that was our one loss that season was at Kansas City, and his contention was if we were at home, we would have been undefeated. So we got railroaded. They cheated. Boom. Here's what I figured out, because I honestly never even cared enough to figure out how they did the scheduling. I just, you know, whatever. The rule is you are on a four-year rotation. So, I mean, the entire rule, obviously you play the NFC North twice a year, blah, 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 work your way down the list. And then the opposite conference, the AFC for us, you play one conference every 4 years, and you play two home games and two away games. It doesn't say you have to rotate which one's which. In other words, if you were home before, you have to be away next time. It does not say that. It says two home and two away. So in 2007, we played the Chiefs and the Broncos away and the Chargers and Raiders at home. That's two home, that's two away. In 2011, we played Chiefs, Chargers away, Broncos, Raiders at home. That's two home, two away, despite the fact that the Chiefs were away twice and the Raiders were at home twice. Again, I don't know how many people are interested in this or care about this, but if you'd been wondering about it, now you know. At least I'm just assuming that. I just read the rule, and that's what the rule says, and based on the rule, we didn't really violate the rule. So there you go. I had also gotten a question on Twitter. This is from Jared. He says, what is the rookie hit rate on rookie wide receivers coming in and producing that year at a level we need them to? I do think we have to sort of keep in mind the Rodgers window, because we could end up with no window in the future, since finding a quarterback is not easy. Great quarterback is not easy. He says, overall, I do agree with you on OBJ, though. So this is always a super contentious thing around this time of year when I say, when I'm somewhat anti-free agency, although I'm not anti-free agency, I just try to be honest with what the each side of it is, and then you always get the yeah, but Rodgers window argument. It's obvious, well, we'll get into the specifics of it, but one of the things that dawned on me when I did and it's hard because I haven't done it yet, and I'm not doing it today, I don't think, but I basically laid out at what year are we in trouble at this position. Quarterback is one of the latest that we have. We've got, I mean, I know it seems like it's coming up quick, but in terms of needs, it's what, like 2024 or something to that effect? I should just pull it up. I mean, basically our entire offensive line, you know, wide receiver, running back, everything is going to be in trouble before. I mean, that's one of the later things. And I get it. It's a different situation when you're talking quarterback. But it helped me to contextualize it, to look at it and say, we've kind of got a long time with this guy. But let's dive specifically into the question, because it is a good question. And I just took 1 year as a sample size, so it's not entirely fair, but it is what it is. This is what happened last year. So what I did is I took every wide receiver that is a first or second round pick. That includes Hollywood Brown, N'Keal Harry, Deebo Samuel, A.J. Brown, Mecole Hardman, Paris Campbell, Andy Isabella, and D.K. Metcalf. Those every wide receiver taken in the first two rounds. Then I took every free agent wide receiver in terms of highest average pay. That is the top eight, because there's eight rookie wide receivers, so I wanted to get eight free agents. Roughly, this is guys that are getting about $9 to $10 million a year. And I just wanted to compare them. What is really the difference? So I looked at their PFF grades. I looked at their cost I looked at their age. I looked at their cost in 2019. I looked at their cost in 2020. I looked at yards, and I looked at touchdowns. So I got stats, I got age, I got cost, I got PFF grade. I feel like I've covered the whole spectrum. Now, I'll admit, when I read the list of wide receivers, which is what I'm going to do next, they actually performed better than I would have expected. As soon as I saw the list of free agent wide receivers, I just cringed and thought, yeah, free agent wide receivers are trash. But they actually performed fairly well. Here's the list. Antonio Brown, Devin Funchess, Jamison Crowder, Golden Tate, Adam Humphries, John Brown, Cole Beasley, and Cordarrell Patterson. Just listen. Let me read them side by side again. We'll do one to one, just so you can hear this out loud. Because again, the assumption that I think a lot of people have is rookies take time to develop. They're not very good. Maybe in a couple of years, but it's super hit and miss. Free agency, you know what you're getting, which is just very not true. Usually, you overpay, and not only do you overpay based on what they've done in the previous years, you overpay based on what they're about to do, which usually there's a massive drop-off. But let's just do one-to-one. Hollywood Brown or Antonio Brown, which is hilarious because they're literally cousins. N'Keal Harry or Devin Funchess. Deebo Samuel or Jamison Crowder. A.J. Brown or Golden Tate. Mecole Hardman or Adam Humphries. Paris Campbell or John Brown. Andy Isabella or Cole Beasley. D.K. Metcalf or Cordarrell Patterson. I can't think, just off the top of your head, of one of those two comparisons in which you would take the free agent. Without even going into any of the details, tell me which one of these free agents you'd rather have than those rookies. Ugh. But all right, let's dig into some of these things, because in terms of grade, I was actually shocked to find out that a lot of these guys performed pretty well. Antonio Brown, I just gave him an NA, because I think he did have a 90 overall grade, but he played one game. One. You don't get credit for one game. I'm sorry. You didn't play. That's what happened. But Devin Funchess had a 69 overall grade, which is basically good. Jamison Crowder at a 72.4, which is good, and I'm shocked. Golden Tate, 74. That's shockingly good. Adam Humphries, 72. Shockingly good. John Brown, 74, which is incredibly good. I mean, for a guy that I would not have expected to contribute anything. Cole Beasley, a 74. And then Cordero Patterson, obviously the guy that the Bears wanted, 54. The one guy in this entire list of both rookies and free agents that's trash is Cordero Patterson, the guy that the Bears got. But the average grade for a free agent was a 69.9. Now, without even giving you any of the additional stats, here's the average for the rookies. It was a 69.2. So just based on that, and I'll go through the individuals, but if I told you that on average from a free agent you're going to get a 70, on average from a rookie you're going to get a 69 overall grade, are you going to pay a free agent rather than a rookie? No. You're not. Going down the list individually, Hollywood Brown was a 70, N'Keal Harry was a 66, Debo was a 75, A.J. Brown was the best of any of these guys at 84, Mecole Hardman was a 70, Paris Campbell was a 54, actually exactly the same as Cordero Patterson, I lied, 54.7, Andy Isabella, 64, D.K. Metcalf was a 70-ish. So the average grade was a 69.2. Compare that to a 69.9. But that's, even all things being exactly equal, you would take free agents barely. But then consider the age. The average age of these free agents was 28 years old, 28 and a quarter. The average age of these rookies is 22 and a half years old. 22 and a half. If we look at yards, the rookies got 543 yards on average. The free agents got 487. The rookies managed to get 4.4 touchdowns per season, per player. The free agents averaged 3.4. So statistically, the rookies were better than the free agents. Basically, they graded out about exactly the same. Statistically, the rookies did better. We're talking about rookies that are 22 years old compared to free agents that are 28 years old. And then comes in the cost. On average in 2019, this is not the average salary. This is what was actually paid, or what was actually, I shouldn't say paid, what was your cap hit? What was the cap hit for this player in 2019? On average, a free agent costs you $6.5 million. On average, these rookies cost $1.2 million. In 2020, that's this year, including Antonio Brown, who's going to hurt the salary cap of the New England Patriots, $8.2 million. $8.2 on average for Antonio Brown, Devin Funchess, Jamison Crowder, Golden Tate, Adam Humphries, John Brown, Cole Beasley, Cordero Patterson. In 2020, the average cost of a rookie, $1.5 million. It's just not even, in any possible category, it's just not even close. Again, outside of just the overall grades. But again, the other aspect of that is, even if they're about the same, what direction, which way is the arrow pointing for these guys? Devin Funchess is not getting better. I mean, maybe Devin Funchess of all of them, because he's 25, but the guy's not getting better. Jamison Crowder, Golden Tate, Adam Humphrey. I mean, Golden Tate is 31 years old. Cole Beasley is 30 years old. These guys are not going to be getting better. So in year one, at an average cost of $1.2 million and at 22 years old, every single one of these guys you would expect to take a step next year or about stay the same. They're not going to get worse. So imagine on average these guys taking a step, while these other guys who are getting paid $8 million a year take a step in the opposite direction. Again, this is just 1 year, and I'm sure there's slightly different results every time. But let's also not forget, this was considered to be a pretty weak wide receiver class. Compare that to this year and try to apply the same logic. What are the odds that the free agents outpace the rookies in this class? It's wildly unlikely. And I mean, you look at Nelson Aguilar, Geronimo Allison, Robbie Anderson, Travis Benjamin, Randall Cobb, Philip Dorsett, Devin Funchess again, Taylor Gabriel, Josh Gordon, Rashard Higgins, Breshad Perriman. And you know, guys know I like Breshad Perriman and Emmanuel Sanders. Not going to be upset about either of those guys, but still. And if you want to talk about doing maybe a little bit of both, okay. maybe kind of hedge your bets, because it probably is a slightly lower risk with a free agent. If you get a free agent, you can, even if you assume he takes a half a step back, you know he's not going to be a complete bust. But then you run into the problem of, take that list, make them take a half a step back. How many of them are not even as good as the guys we already have? So now you have to get high-priced guys, and now you're spending way too much for wide receivers and drafting a guy early. It's just too many resources. So it's a complicated equation. If you just do a wide receiver in the draft, there is a chance he's going to be a bust. I don't care if you have the number 5 overall pick. He could absolutely be a bust, regardless of position, regardless of anything. I mean, number 1 overall picks bust all the time. So there is that risk. But there are no easy good answers is sort of the problem. Everything has a downside. But, you know, again, this was my best attempt at trying to honestly look at, again, the top free agents compared to the first two rounds of wide receivers in the draft. And by just about every metric, the rookies were actually better than the free agents, with the exception of PFF grade, in which they were basically tied. They were both 69. One you round up to 70, one you round down to 69. But again, in 2020, the odds that those guys, one of which at least is not even in the league anymore, the other one, one of them's a free agent again, and probably will be a free agent every year until he finally just nobody wants him anymore, Devin Funchess, because the guy's just never been any good. So again, it just, you just run into that problem. I mean, you know, again, we can go get Devin Funchess, but I think I would rather have Equanimeous and, you know, give Marquez a shot, see if he can get better than last year. I know he was ridiculously terrible last year, but Alan Lazard, I doubt he's going to be better than Alan Lazard. And again, that's sort of the problem. And you're paying more. And again, the only way you get around that is you just give the absolute bag to, you know, an Emmanuel Sanders or, you know, maybe Breshad Perriman. I believe in Breshad Perriman, but he's sort of a high-risk guy because he's newly awesome and he's been kind of terrible in the past. So maybe he's a breakout guy that's about to be a freak. Maybe he just had a flukish year on the right team and he's about to regress. I don't know. But there aren't too many great options. But if you had to prioritize between the draft or a free agent, it's not even close. Especially this year, draft. If you want to do first round, if you want to do second round, I'd prefer we don't wait until the third round if possible, but I'm sure there's still going to be good options in the third. We're going to be better off than either paying $1 billion for, I don't even know who you'd give a lot of money to. Emmanuel Sanders, I guess, if he's able to leave. AJ Green is going to be franchise tagged, and Amari Cooper is going to be franchised, I'm sure. There just aren't that many good options. So there you go. All right, third question. Sorry, I don't remember where it came from, but there was a question about my, let's say, dislike of Joe Schobert. Does this correlate with losing Myles Garrett? In short, no, but it's a little bit more nuanced. Basically, if I were to summarize, he was horrible after Garrett left. That's 100% true. But it really wasn't any different before he left, which is sort of the issue. With Garrett gone, Pro Football Focus graded him highly only one time. He had two games in which he was terrible. This is out of 6 games. In the 11 games that year with Garrett, he had 4 games in which he did a good job, and 4 times in which he was abysmal. To be fair, though, if we were to try to twist this as best as I can into a pro-Schobert thing, because I've obviously been very anti-Schobert, so let's try to put a somewhat positive spin on this. This year was an extremely down year. So if we were to ask the same question, which is how many times he graded terribly, which would be 40s or below, because again, 60s via PFF is average, 50s is below average, which isn't good, it's bad, but just looking at terrible, over the last 3 years, while Garrett's been on the team, the answer would be 7 in total over 3 years, 4 of which were this year, again, while Garrett was there. So this year in particular was really terrible. So on an average year, he has maybe 2 to 3 really bad games. The problem is that still doesn't fix the issue. Even if, let's say, this was a down year and he never has a year like this again, Blake Martinez only had 3 this year. He had a bunch of 50s and 60s and you know, not a whole lot of really good ones. But just again, for context, looking at terrible games, he had 3 and his lowest was a 48, which really isn't that low. So again, we're just looking at 40s, and even his 40s were basically 50s. So even at his best, I still think Joe Schobert is actually a downgrade from Blake Martinez. The only real question is scheme fit, and I don't know. I've said pretty repeatedly that Blake Martinez can be a better linebacker somewhere else. I think he was a better linebacker before Mike Pettine came over here. I think Mike Pettine asked him to do different things, and although he's a very smart player, he just does not fit this scheme at all. And so there's a question of, would Joe Schobert come and be a better scheme fit? I tend to think he's the same kind of player, but I don't really know that to be the case. I mean, I know they're both bigger, slower guys. I can't imagine having almost the exact same 40 time. Schobert is a really good, and he's not a good cover. I can see his grades. He's not a very good cover guy. But that doesn't mean there's not a little bit more nuance to what it is that they do well. Possibly that could work with Pettine. And if they do decide to go after Schobert, that has to be the reason. That whatever it is that Mike Pettine needs a linebacker to do, Schobert can do it and Blake can't. And the assumption will be that he can come here and be better. It, almost like it would be just a swap, right? Maybe if Blake goes to the Browns and Schobert comes here, both of them will thrive. I don't know, but I'm just making things up if I have to come up with a reason for why Schobert would do well here. It's not based on anything he's ever done in his entire career, because he has never been a good linebacker ever, despite getting a lot of... I still have it technically, but I don't use it, which really upsets me, because it was a relatively popular NFL draft YouTube channel. Literally every day that drives me nuts that I'm not utilizing that. But anyways, I remember when I would mock linebackers to the Browns, this was probably 2 years ago, and people would flip out, like, what are you talking about, dude? Joe Schobert's one of the best linebackers in football. And it's like, where do you see this? It's just, like, certain fan bases and cultures just have this idea. Even, like, maybe in the media and stuff, that certain guys are just good, and maybe it's just a thing where PFF just wildly disagrees with the national consensus. Because I remember thinking Schobert's really good, but I go back and look at it, it's like, where? When? How? It's just, it's not a thing. That was the one downside to you. I mean, the podcast is almost all positive. Like, if I go on a super negative tirade, I'll get some bunch of bad messages, which is why I try to stay more positive. Critical, but not just, like, very vitriolically angry. If you've been listening for a while, I've done some pretty harsh tirades. But for the most part, it's pretty positive. YouTube, it's all negative. It's you don't comment on YouTube unless it's to tell someone that you hope they die. I mean, it's just not a thing. So that's the one good thing about not doing YouTube, I guess. So, you know, specifically going back to the question, take it for what it's worth. Does it seem as though possibly without Garrett, I'm sure he's worse without Garrett. And you could, I mean, it's super small sample size, but technically, mathematically, he did do worse without him. But it doesn't move the needle in terms of, do I care? Because I still don't want Schobert. But, I mean, if that's strictly the question, yes, I would say he's worse without Garrett. But It for our purposes, it doesn't matter. Anyways, why don't we take a break right now? A little bit early, but it's a good mid mark. Dude, Quinnen Williams got arrested. What happened here? I don't know why when I say let's take a break, I pick up my phone like I'm actually taking. I'm not even taking a break. I literally just keep talking, and I just have to insert an ad later. But I act like it's break time. No, it's not for you, dumb dumb. Anyways, apparently Quinnen Williams got arrested for having a gun at an airport, so... I don't know, man. Whatever. Anyways, some relatively big news out of Washington. It's been a big to-do about Trent Williams and needing to keep Trent Williams, and it sounded like it was a done deal. Like, they're definitely going to keep Trent Williams. Apparently, the Washington Redskins just told him, you know what, why don't you go shop yourself? Go ask around, see if you can find yourself a nice little home. He still has 1 year left on his contract, which is weird. Usually, when you kind of shop yourself around, it's as a free agent. But apparently, they're giving him the opportunity to find a trade partner for himself. I don't know if I've ever heard of that before. Obviously, with this, there's going to be some Packer fans that are going to say we should go get him, because that's just what Packer fans do. Again, my biggest issue is, if we're going to replace Brian Bulaga, it shouldn't be with somebody older than Brian Bulaga. Trent Williams is 31 years old. Beyond that, Trent Williams did not play this year. He did play last year. He was the 14th highest graded pass blocker in football. The problem is Brian Bulaga was 9th last year, because Brian Bulaga's always been good, despite the fact that Packer fans never wanted to give him credit. I don't understand it. Up until, I think, this past year, Packer fans hated Brian Bulaga. I mean, hated is a little strong, but I could not believe how much defending Brian Bulaga I used to have to do. He's not that good. He's always hurt. He's a billion penalties. Which, the penalties were wildly overstated. In fact, this past year, David Bakhtiari was the penalty guy. injuries are fair. But if injuries are your concern, Trent Williams is not the solution. And maybe I'm just talking to myself because nobody actually wants this guy. I don't know. But just looking at the snap counts, it looks like he's been hurt pretty much every year since forever. So David Bakhtiari, for example, is typically going to play over 1,000 snaps. I think most tackles that play an entire season play at around above 1,000 snaps. His snap counts 792, 615, 795, 993, 877, and then 1,143. If I had to guess, I'd say he's been injured and missed time almost every year, probably every year. Maybe not 2015, but 993 snaps is very low. I mean, it's high, but it's low. Maybe he missed a game. I don't know. Fine, I'll just go look at it. Yeah, he missed a, I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 9. So he missed week 6. One of these is a bye week, but 6. He didn't play in week 6. He didn't play in week 8. He didn't play in week 17, which is a week. So he missed at least 2 weeks in 2015. So he's missed time every... This is a terrible... For anybody. This guy is injured constantly. He didn't even play at all last year. He's 31 years old. He's talented, but Spotrac has him at $15 million a year. And again, this is another situation. I know based just on media hype, people think Trent Williams is one of the best tackles. And he is. The problem is we don't understand contextually what that means. We think David Bakhtiari is arguably the best tackle in football. Maybe he's up there with like two or three other guys. Trent Williams is one of the guys that's up in that upper echelon. And then Brian Bulaga is somewhere down in the lower, you know, I mean, he's good, but he's not like up there. That's just not true. That's not how it, Trent Williams is not, I would argue, based on PFF grades, and we can go through stats if you like, not as good as Brian Bulaga. He's hurt more often than Brian Bulaga. He's older than Brian Bulaga. And apparently, he's going to cost more than Brian Bulaga. So I know that he's seen as a better tackle. I know he's appreciated more. Probably, maybe part of it is because he's a left tackle. I don't really know. Which, again, is ridiculous because Brian Bulaga went up against tougher competition than David Bakhtiari did this past year. Because you got guys like Von Miller and Khalil Mack that line up primarily on the right side. The offense's right side, that is. And he handled his business. Between the two, the only guy I remember getting completely wrecked was David Bakhtiari when we played the Chargers. And he could not do anything to stop Joey Bosa. Not a single thing. He just got wrecked by Joey Bosa. I'm not trying to dog David Bakhtiari. I need you to really understand Brian Bulaga is a top 10 tackle. Has been for a very long time. I don't care what you heard about Trent Williams or what your preconceived notions about Brian Bulaga are. Brian Bulaga is one of the best tackles in football. So absolutely not for Trent Williams. I don't know why anybody would even want to pay. I mean, I guess I understand it. Some teams just don't have, they really need a tackle and they don't have one. In which case, Trent Williams, is a very good option. But you're paying a lot and it's a huge risk. The injuries and the age and everything, it's just, eesh. The Packers should not even be considered. And they're not. They're not considering this. Plus, you'd have to trade for him. And probably offer him a new contract, unless you want to trade and have him for 1 year, which you don't. So you'd have to give up draft capital to the Washington Redskins, who absolutely do not want to give him up. They're letting him test the market so that they can essentially prove to him that he's not going anywhere and that he's not worth that much. Because teams aren't going to offer that much for a 31-year-old guy that hasn't played a full season since 2014. And so when he finds out that teams are only willing to give up like a fourth or fifth round pick for him, he's going to realize he's not going anywhere and stay with Washington. Probably, maybe, possibly, although you get a team that's desperate for a tackle. Not even sure who that would be anymore. I would say Seattle, but they've got a left tackle now. Even the Vikings, you know, I don't think they would. Plus, they can't. They can't afford him. Texans went out and traded for their tackle already. I don't know. I don't know. He's not going anywhere. We don't want him. We shouldn't want him. Wildly overrated by the media. Very good, but just ridiculously overrated by the media. And again, it's contextual, because what I think has been talked about a lot is how important he is to the Washington Redskins, because he is. He is one of the top tackles, and if they lose him, they're in a lot of trouble. So the importance of him makes sense, but I think the problem is we internalize that to mean he's one of the best in the business, because you just hear about how important he is all the time, and how much money he's going to get, and all this stuff. And I think it just kind of gets built up. Speaking of getting built up, little segue into our next topic. I want to, I guess, look at RAS one more time. And again, I'm not trying to dog it. It's a very cool thing, but, and it's not necessarily about RAS, but the combine in general, I think sometimes what, and this is a common thing that happens around this time, is counting people twice after the combine. And I think this is happening with Isaiah Simmons. I saw recently, a mock draft, and I know this was very widely mocked. I shouldn't say mocked. Ridiculed. Could be confused saying it the other way. Very widely ridiculed because essentially, I believe Isaiah Simmons went number two to the Washington Redskins and then Chase went to the Lions. And what he said was that he's my number one overall player. Isaiah Simmons is kind of shooting up the boards. Here's the problem. Isaiah Simmons is considered a top 10 talent because he's a freak. He went to the combine and proved he's a freak, but you don't move him up. Unless he's more of a freak than you thought. But at the end of the day, Isaiah Simmons is where he is based on what he is, and that's a freak. And again, maybe he gets a tiny bump. And I don't. If you think he's the number one player in the draft, that's fine. But don't assume that just because of what he did at the combine. A lot of people see big boards and mock drafts where Isaiah Simmons is a top 10 guy, and they just assume he's top 10 just, I don't know, intrinsically or based on his play, but we have no idea how fast he is, how high he jumps, any of that stuff. And then when we see he's a freak and he gets a 10 out of 10 RAS, we freak out and we say, oh, he's the number one guy in the class. Don't do that. You're counting him twice. It would be like if on eBay, we still to some degree sell on eBay, somebody will buy something, but eBay is kind of weird where they don't actually pay for it, at least not yet. It's not like a normal checkout thing where you pay and then it gets sent to you like, hey, somebody paid for this, send it to them. No. They buy it, and then later they decide to pay for it. It would be like after they buy it, I send them the item, and then after the money clears, I send them another item. You're giving them something twice. Again, as I've said plenty of times now, the combine, in terms of the measurables and all that stuff, only serves to move people up and down based on what they did compared to expectations. If we had more time, I would dive into that, because I did that, a whole spiel on that. But we don't have time. But just looking at it, I want to give you some examples of 10 out of 10s for RAS that didn't really do very much. First of all, punter Mitch Wishnowsky. Hilariously, yes, a punter. He was one of the worst punters in football this past year. Now, that's a terrible example, but whatever. Lorenzo Carter, the linebacker, had a 10 out of 10. Absolute freak. He was the 40th best linebacker in football this past year. Brian Cowrey. He is currently playing for the DC Defenders. He never even made it to the NFL. Lawrence Okoye, a 10 out of 10 RAS athletic freak. He was an undrafted free agent. He was in the league for 5 years, never played a single snap in the regular season. Devin Goda, undrafted free agent for 1 year. Then you've got guys that are decent enough, but not super elite. For example, tight end Jordan Cameron. You probably remember him. But he was a tight end for a few years, kind of a big name for about 1 year. Not Cam Jordan, Jordan Cameron. That's always got confused all the time. In his best year, though, he was the 28th best tight end in football. Cam Newton is a 10 out of 10. Now, Cam Newton's a decent enough quarterback, but that's the thing. He was 23rd overall in 2018. He was one of the worst quarterbacks in football in 2019, but there was a bunch of injuries and et cetera, et cetera. So I went back to 2018. But even that's not an anomaly that he was 23rd. He was 34th the year before that. He was 24th the year before that. PFF only gave him a really good grade once. That's the other thing about Cam. He's great in fantasy football. As far as how he grades out as a quarterback, he's never actually been a super elite quarterback. He just gets a lot of yards and touchdowns because he runs the ball a lot. He also airmails the ball constantly. But the point is, Cam is what he is, and you don't bump him up because of how much of an athletic freak he is. He's an athletic freak, but so what? Marshawn Lattimore, another massively athletic freak, and he is a good football player, but he was 44th overall this past year. So guys are what they are. If you want to put another twist on this, Luke Kuechly was a 10 out of 10, and obviously he was a freak, but Luke Kuechly wasn't a freak because he got a 10 as an RAS, a relative athletic score, if you don't know what that is. It's how fast and how high you jump and all that stuff compared to how tall and how fat you are. Isaiah Simmons is ridiculously fast for being like a 235-pound guy. Very fast, jumps very high, and he weighs a decent amount. You know, he's out jumping corners, he's out running wide receiver, and he's as big as a linebacker. That's what makes him a freak. But it still ultimately comes down to how good of a football player you are, and that's really what makes me nervous about Isaiah Simmons. The upside for him is through the roof. His ability to be Luke Kuechly, it's absolutely there. His ability to be a Swiss Army knife, to be a Derwin James, to be whatever is there in terms of his athletic upside. I'm just concerned about, especially when you move to the NFL and you're being asked to do like three different positions. I want you to be a safety, I want you to be a linebacker, and I want you to be a corner. And you have to learn these positions mentally and be able to do these things and be able to switch things and rotate and do this and do that. It just makes me nervous. But again, the overall thing that I'm trying to say He is what he is based on how he plays. If you want to rank him number one overall in the draft, fine, but that has to be based on what you're watching on tape. And if what you're watching on tape is an athletic freak, that's fine. We know that based on his testing. If you don't see an athletic freak and he got a bump because of the combine, you got to kind of ask yourself, why don't you see it on tape? And that should make you nervous. In other words, if he got a massive bump, if he was already, you know, relatively high, but he gets a massive bump because of his combine testing, you got to ask the question, why doesn't he look faster on tape? It should be somewhat of a concern. But I think that this is a... And the reason I highlight Isaiah Simmons, it happens every year for a lot of different prospects, is because of the amount of hype. I mean, Isaiah Simmons, now he could go number three, he can go number... what? He's not going to go number two, but he's now regularly being mocked to the Lions. And again, I don't mind if you believe that that's genuinely a thing, but it's not a coincidence that it happened after the combine. And the problem, again, I have with that is we already knew he was a freak. So why was he a 5, 6, 7, 8 guy before and now he's a 3 guy? What changed? Nothing changed. At least from my perspective. Maybe it changed for you. I don't know. Just a heads up. Don't do that. We're just looking at what is different. For example, the LaVisca Chenault thing is troubling to me, and I hope that he can get surgery and get healed up and run faster at his pro day, and if he doesn't, I hope he is, because he looks really fat. But a big part of the reason he's so high up for me is because he does all these really cool things that I like, but then I also saw a guy that looked really quick. But then he ran really slow. I mean, not really slow, but slow. So that's troubling to me, because that was a big part of my evaluation, is that despite being really big, really strong, really good at all these versatile things, he's also a pretty fast wide receiver. If suddenly he's not fast, that makes me nervous. Also, Jalen Reagor. I'm hoping he goes faster at his pro day, but a big part of his evaluation is that he's a speed guy. There was talk about, could he possibly be faster than Ruggs? And most people said no, but he's probably still like a 4.35 guy. He ran a 4.47. That is wildly troubling. I know he jumps really high and all that stuff, but this is a guy that was expected to be in the 4.3s who ran a 4.47. Why? Right? That's troubling to me. A big part of his appeal is that he's really, really fast. So, again, that's in a situation where I'm looking at it going, it scares me a little bit. Again, we'll see the pro day. Maybe that'll change it. I know the scheduling messed everything up, and certain people were just... they're cold, they're tired, they've been sitting around for 4 or 5 hours just waiting to run because the schedule is all dumb. But, you know, these are examples of people that move. Either you did a lot better than people expected, right? Mims. I don't think anyone expected Mims to be a 4.3 guy. So you take all these things that you really like about him and that he looks relatively fast, and then you find out he's a 4.3 guy? Whoo! I understand the hype. Now, maybe it's a little bit more overhyped than it should be, but I absolutely understand why he's now getting more hype than he did in the past. It makes sense. He exceeded expectations. I just don't think Isaiah Simmons exceeded expectations. He's a freak, but again, we knew he was a freak. Anyways, I gotta get going. You folks have yourselves a fantastic day. I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.